So hopefully by now you're getting the sense that shapeshifting as an idea and even as a practice runs throughout human culture. It's the subject of myths, legends, and fairy tales on every continent. It's a practice that can radically reorient your sense of your own identity and your relationship to the rest of the cosmos. But Steve has another question.
Do we know how far back this history of shapeshifting goes?
So the answer is ultimately no, but the answer is also a long, long time.
Archaeologist Chris Gosden.
So in a cave in Germany, a place called Städel Cave, there is a figure made out of mammoth ivory, 40,000 years old. It's got human arms, it's got human legs, it may well have a human penis, but it's also got a very clearly lion's head. We have no idea at all what belief systems were 40,000 years ago, but it's possible that the people who carved this thing were trying to combine the powers of the lion, the powers of the mammoth, and the powers of the human. And also quite possible that they didn't make the sorts of distinctions that we would make between species that, you know, in many cultures today, if you meet a bear, you're not sure whether it's a bear or a human bear. It could be a human in a bear's form. So maybe some of those ideas go a long, long way back.
That's fascinating. You're saying that most cultures, at least historically, have viewed the world this way. There's no rigid line between human and animal.
No, I think it's Western science that has come to draw this line. So universities make a distinction between the disciplines that study humans, the social sciences, philosophy, history, and the disciplines which study the natural world, the zoology department, the plant sciences department, and they are totally different intellectual enterprises, different ways of seeing the world. But say a Siberian shaman would scratch their head as to why they aren't one and the same thing, really.
So there are certain people in certain cultures, I guess the shaman is the most common word for these people, who seem to have this ability, or it's believed they have this ability to turn into an animal.
Yeah.
Often in a trance-like state.
Yeah.
What was the shaman trying to do when entering these other worlds, these spirit worlds? What was the purpose of those spirit journeys?
So the things that happen in the world that we inhabit, say your reindeer herd starts to die, or the geese that you hunt don't turn up one year, the reasons for that will be in the underworld, as we would conceive of it. So often the shaman will be journeying into this deeper world to try and work out what the spiritual problems are that are affecting the reindeer herd or the geese, diagnose it, deal with it, wrestle with it, intercede with the spirits, and then come back. And then hopefully the reindeer will recover. So all life forms have intelligence, and if you're in tune enough, clever enough to read what the trees are worrying about, then you can learn a lot about the world as well.
You're talking about animist cultures.
I am.
How would you describe the animist worldview?
The animist worldview is an enchanted worldview. Animists believe everything is animate, obviously, and that's not just reindeer and trees. A rock is sentient, not in a weird human way, it's sentient in the way that a rock is sentient. You know, the basic answer to how rocks react is slowly. You know, their timescales are, they don't rush things, do rocks. They will erode, they will roll down the valley, but it can all take a long, long time. You can't rush a rock by and large.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about in your book, you talk about what's been called the new animism, that, you know, it's possible to think about these ideas as not just some sort of pre-modern worldview, that a lot of these ideas are actually consistent with modern science if you really sort of explore the edges of science and philosophy. I mean, so the question is, how do you reconcile this magical world that you've been talking about with today's science.
Mm. Yes, part of what I'm trying to do is to argue for the development of a new form of magic, because I think it would give us a much more open, healthy relationship with the world. So how are rocks sentient? So there are a number of different scientific answers to that question. One comes from the problem of consciousness and so-called panpsychism. So the issue with consciousness is we're conscious. We can probably say that most life forms are conscious in various different ways, down to probably viruses and various things. But then at some stage, we might want to stop and say, as Westerners, that rocks aren't sentient. But panpsychists say that if you don't make that distinction, if you say that everything is conscious, everything is sentient, it doesn't get you to set up boundaries between the sentient and the non-sentient, that the universe as a whole.
Well, and it relates to this ecological notion of kinship.
Yeah.
That we humans are kin with everything in the natural world. To be human is to be intimately connected with all of life, and the rocks and the mountains and the rivers as well. And
yeah,
this, of course, goes way back in the worldview of indigenous cultures.
Yeah.
And it would seem that there's an ethics that comes along with that as well.
Absolutely. So the really important element of that, the unity of humans with the world around them, that encourages an element of kinship and therefore an element of care. And definitely we are in a mess. Most people, I think, now would accept that there's a climate emergency, there's an ecological catastrophe happening, and that's in large part because we've been living too well, we've taken too much from the world, and rather than thinking of the world as our kin, we think of the world as a series of resources that we can extract. But if we have also a sort of transgenerational notion, what are we going to pass on to our kids and our grandkids? Then that also encourages a notion of care. We would like to pass on a world in good order, in a world that they can live in. So for me, the really important notion of elements of magic is they encourage kinship, they encourage care, they encourage a sense of unity with the world rather than a separateness from it.
Chris Gosden, talking with Steve Paulson. Chris is an archaeologist at Oxford University and author of a groundbreaking new book called Magic, A History, From Alchemy to Witchcraft, the Ice Age to the Present.